So I told you a story a couple weeks about the book of Acts, about how to sail across the Mediterranean Sea. There's a story on how to take a boat from Syria to Rome. And you're thinking, what's this got to do with anything? I don't know. The whole Bible's a setup. You know that? It's a setup. You start in Genesis chapter 3, right? And you got these two people in the garden. And the snake comes along and tempts them. We fall into sin. We're kicked out of the garden. But God makes a promise. I'm going to do something one day. Your seed, woman, is going to destroy evil and bring salvation to the world. It's all a big setup, isn't it? From the day one or whatever day that was, day 10. We probably weren't in the garden too long, right? So there we are. It's a setup, and we tell a story. There's a story about a guy. He's cutting down a tree, and his axe falls in the water. And what are you going to do? Because he borrowed it. Did someone ever borrow your tool and lose it? My friend borrowed a chainsaw, and he said it was stolen or it stopped working. But I never saw it again. So if you ask me if I have a chainsaw, I say no. I don't have one. I have three. And guess what? They're all in working condition. Can you borrow them? No, you cannot. Right? Because they're all in working condition. Did I tell you that? They're sharp. New spark plug. Good gas. The gas isn't old. You cannot borrow my spark plug. You can borrow my pickup truck. Because that's got insurance. You can take it wherever you want. You know. But you can't borrow. Can I borrow your car, the Chevy 2? Absolutely not. Well, we're not that. We're good friends, but we're not that good, right? It's just a thing. It's just, but it's going to stay. That's how we'll stay friends. If I don't cruise around town in the Chevy 2, nominated again, because it's the best one. So here we have a story of a man named Elijah. He's a prophet of God. We're here in 2 Kings, verse 6. Why are we in 2 Kings today? I don't know. I needed to fill in this week with something because we finished the book of Acts, and I'm going to start the Sermon on the Mount in 2 weeks, but I don't know the story yet, so I have to read up on it, all right? The sermon, we've heard it, right? But I'm not ready to preach it. So I just grabbed a story out of anywhere, and I came up with 2 Kings, and I see this. We know the story of Elijah, right? He's the one, he went there, he was a prophet of God, and he thinks he's the last one. He goes on, he takes the 200 priests, and he kills them all. He has this big contest, and he runs away to Sinai. He's like, I'm the only one. And God says, no, you're not. There's more like you. Now you need your replacement. You got to hire your replacement. So he's walking around looking for someone. He sees a guy plowing the field, and he says, follow me. Come be the prophet of God. And the guy's plowing his field with two bulls, and he says, okay, I'll do it. And you know it's real because he slaughters both bulls and feeds the whole village, takes his plow and burns it. There's no turning back, is there now? He'll never farm again. He's going to be a prophet for God. His name is Elisha. When I first hear this story as a new person reading the Bible, Elijah, Elisha, couldn't they be more original? I can't stand the first two kings of Judah and the third king of Israel, Jeroboam and Rehoboam. That sounds fake to me. But it's not. That's how it is. We got Caitlin, we got Katie, right? I got all these names that are the same, right? And so here he comes, and he's the new, we know what happens with Elijah, right? He's taken up to heaven. He doesn't die in a chariot of fire, and off he goes. And now it's Elisha. He's in charge. He's the prophet of God to speak for him. And how's Israel doing? The country, it's doing pretty bad. They've turned away from God. What happens when you turn away from God? What does he say he's going to do? When the people despise his statutes and his covenant that he made with their fathers and the warnings that he gave them, the people, they go after false idols. Martin Luther says, whatever you love most, right, that's your idol. What do you love most? Concerning whom the Lord had commanded him, he said, do not be like the nations around here. They were supposed to come in and wipe out the nations. Why? Because the other nations would corrupt them. And today we look at something like that and say, that sounds terrible. But the people, they're going to destroy you. What was the goal of the Amalekites? To wipe them off the face of the earth. What does it say in the constitution of Hamas? What is their goal? The destruction of Israel from the face of the earth. That's when they'll stop. Read it. They'll stop when they're all gone. That's what the Amalekites said. We know that Saul did not destroy them, did he? He kept the king and he kept all their goodies, didn't he? And God said, not you anymore. I'm going to get a new one. I'm picking David. See, they abandoned all the commandments of the Lord their God. and made for themselves metal images of two calves. We've heard this story before, haven't we? How'd the first time it go when they made a golden calf? Not too well, huh? Right, Nate? You heard that story? They made a calf, and God was not happy. 3,000 people died that day. They made an Asherah, which is a pole, and they were dancing around the pole, and they worshiped, and they served Baal, the Canaanite god. And what else did they do? They burned their sons and their daughters as offerings. And they used divination. They believed in ghosts and omens. And they sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord. And they made him angry. And so he took his protection away from them. So here comes Elijah, man of God, to bring the people back. The city that's away from them. There's enemies attacking from all sides. And so here's Elijah. He's hanging out with a group of prophets. And they're like, you know what? We need a bigger place. We're hanging out in this little place. We need a bigger church. Let's go to the Jordan, down to the river, where each of us can get a pole, and let's build a new big tent. Sounds great. And he says, Elijah, will you come with me? He goes, I'll do it. He's pretty agreeable. He goes with them. They went down to the Jordan. They began to cut down trees. And as one of them was cutting down a tree, the axe head fell into the water. And what did it do? It sunk. He's like, oh, no, it was borrowed. Oh, he's in trouble now. And you lose your own. Elijah asked, where did it fall? And he showed him the place. What does Elisha do? He cuts a stick and he throws the stick in the water and the axe head floats. That's not supposed to, is it? Lift it out and grab it. It's a setup, isn't it? What's this story mean? Something good. What does waters mean? We know when Jonah goes down to the depths, right? Or Moses crosses through the waters. The waters represent death, don't they? When we're at the bottom of the ocean, not a good place to be. Man and I were sitting on Chincoteague Beach looking at the Atlantic Ocean. How small do you feel when you sit next to the ocean? And there's big boats go by. Like, I'm just a wee lad. Look at me on this earth. I'm not much. I'm like a grain of sand, aren't I? But yet God came down to die for me. That means something, huh? So what's this story mean? It's like this. Something important gets drawn into death. And what saves it? Something living. Something living has to be thrown into the depths for this thing to come back, huh? He's setting us up, isn't he? Think about this. Next story. That's it. That's the end of that story. What's he do next? 2 Kings, verse 8. Now the king of Aram, which is modern-day Syria, up above Israel, as we know, they got a new leader, right? The leader once had a 10 million by the by us. Martin Luther says, talk about today's things. If we skip them, we're skipping the gospel. He says, the leader, who they elected president, used to have a $10 million bounty on us by the U.S. How'd you like to find him? He may fight for you over getting that $10 million, but here he was. Now he's the president, but there's peace. Will he allow free elections? Absolutely not, he says. It's complicated, isn't it, politics? So but there's peace. They're rebuilding Syria, thank goodness, for the people. And, you know, leadership is what it is. It's usually corrupt. So then the king of Aram, they were at war with Israel. And he says, I'm going to set my camp here. Then we're going to go on raids. But the man of God sent word to the king of Israel. The man of God here is Elisha. Beware of this place or that place, because that's where the Aramaeans are going. God tells them where they're going to be, so they're protected. In the midst of being falling away from God and worshiping other people and sacrificing children, God still protects his people. Cool, huh? He's setting us up for a story. So the king checked on the place indicated by Elisha. And time again, Elisha warned the king. So he's always on his guard in such places. And this made the king of Aram very mad, right? He keeps going places. He can't find the enemy to fight them. Tell me, he says, which one of us is on the side of the king of Israel? Which one of you here is spying on us, telling him? And they say, none of them. Elisha the prophet, God tells Elijah, all the words you speak in your own bedroom. Anything secret, Elisha knows because God's letting him know. He's protecting his people like he said he would always. Go find out where he is, the king has ordered, so I can go capture him. Well, he's in Dothan, they find out. A city in the south, in Samaria. They sent horses and chariots and a strong force there. They went by night, and they surrounded the city. And when they woke up, the man of God got up, And he saw that the army of that had surrounded them. One of the servants said, "Oh, my Lord, what shall we do?" And what does the prophet say? "Don't worry. They're surrounded, but everything's okay." Why is it okay? Because who's got you? God's got you. He says, "Lord, open this man's eyes." He prays to God, and the man opens his eyes, and what does he see? He sees the army angel, an angel army, and horses surrounding the city. You're protected. They always set us up, the Bible doesn't. There in Numbers 22, when the prophet Balaam is paid to go curse Israel, he's paid to go goes to Israel to curse them. But on his way there, he's riding a donkey. And he gets to the city where he's going to curse it. What happens? He's beating the donkey. The donkey won't move. Why won't the donkey move? Because the donkey sees the angel of the Lord standing in front of the gate. So he beats him again. And finally, true story, the donkey says, you like this part? The donkey says, "Why are you beating me? Why are you beating me? Don't you see the angel?" And then his eyes are open and he sees the angels. It's always a setup, isn't it? What's a donkey talking donkey story doing? It's setting up for this one, and we see it, and we see it. It keeps building. Isn't it neat? Aren't we excited, Dorothy? The Bible's great. We're reading it together on Friday, 10 o'clock at the Harlan House. And what does he say? They see an army of angels there to protect them. And there's the army comes, and what happens? He blinds them. Okay. There's an army coming, and you see the army angels, and he prays to God, "Protect us." And all the soldiers are blinded. And they're walking around, they can't see nothing, right? What are you going to do then? If your enemy's blinded, walking around, can't see, it's your opportunity now, isn't it? It's your opportunity to slaughter them all. But what does Elijah say? Don't do it. You know what we're going to do instead? We're going to feed them. We're going to bring them in, give them something to drink. We're going to give them something to eat. It says in Proverbs, your enemy, if you give them food and drink, it's like pouring hot coals on their head, isn't it? Take care of them. And what do? They leave. They go back to their masters, and they don't fight any war anymore because their eyes were blind, but now they're open, and they get to go back home, don't they? Good story, isn't it? It's short-lived. You know, people don't like each other. So they come back. They come back shortly under the King Ben-Hadad. He comes back, moves his entire army because he really wants to siege this place. He really wants to destroy the capital, Samaria. And there's a great famine in the city. And the siege lasted so long that a donkey's head sold for 80 shekels. That's a lot of money. You can buy a slave for 30 shekels. 80 shekels is what would take you to earn half a year. There's inflation. Have you heard that one before? You heard about inflation? Oh. Don't get me started. Inflation. There's inflation there. You can buy a cup of bird poop to eat because it costs $5. That's what they're eating. Donkey heads and bird poop. My Bible makes it nice and cute. Says a cup of the bean pot. Remember the pods that the prodigal son was eating? But most versions say a cup of pigeon dung. 5 shekels. And as the king was passing by and there was a siege and the people are starving to death, they can't afford donkey heads. And so the king says, someone says to the king, "Help me, my lord, help me." And the king says, "If the Lord does not help you, where can I get help for you? From the threshing floor or from the wine press?" He's getting a little smarmy, isn't he? "I can do nothing to help you. Can I make bread? Can I make wine? What's the matter?" She said, "You see, this woman came up to me." Remember, these people are corrupt, right? They've fallen away from God. That's why they're in this position. What does she say? "This woman came to me," in verse 28, "give up your son so that we may eat him today. And tomorrow we'll eat my son." And we cooked my son and we ate him. And the next day I said to her, "Give up your son that we may eat him." But she had hidden him. And when the king heard the woman's word, he tore his robes in distress. And he went along the wall, and the people looked, and they saw that under his robe he was in mourning. You see, we want bread and wine. What does Jesus say? I'm the bread of life. And drink this wine, and you'll have everlasting life. And more importantly, who gave up their son so that we can have this eternal heavenly banquet again? The country became depraved. They had always been doing this, throwing their children in the fire. God says, this is what you're going to do. I told you you would do this. Didn't you read the book? Didn't you read Deuteronomy? Didn't you read what it said? Deuteronomy 28, then you will eat the fruit of your womb, the flesh of your sons and daughters, whom the Lord your God has given you, in the siege and distress that your enemy will inflict upon you. The most gentle and the refined among you will begrudge his brother and the wife he loves and the rest of his children who have survived, refusing to share with them any of the flesh of his children he will eat because he has nothing left. This is what you're going to do when we turn away from God. This is horrible, isn't it? But when are we, where are we going to get enough to eat? The people follow Jesus after he feeds the 5,000. They want more, don't they? They're following around town. Jesus, give us more. We like what you did. We came together and you fed all of us. That was great. Do that again. He says, I will, but not this kind of food. You know what you really need? It's not the material things you need. It's the bread of life. It's the blood of the new covenant, the wine, the cup of wrath. Well, I will drink, not you. I'm going to take that cup. This is what we need. Did I upset you today? A little bit. It's what it says, doesn't it? We're going to ignore it? We can't just pick the fun to pluck the gems, right? Look what it says. This is what we'll be if we don't turn to him. This is what the world turns into. Turn to God. Amen. Be encouraged. Rejoice in the name of the Lord. If anyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved, right? Anyone. Amen. Amen.